Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. In today's episode, I talk with Heather Rose Dunning, founder of Yellow Dog Studio. She builds high-performing teams, combining the special talents of designers, architects, engineers, and contractors to specifically serve each client. Heather builds these teams that operate with precision, trust, and focus. Each project stays in the hands of her A team. And her teams are specialists trained for a specific purpose. They are like a falcon taking flight off the arm of a falconer. They move with clarity and focus, becoming a seamless extension of their clients. They strike with precision to complete the project's vision. In this episode, we talk about how her excellent performance and carefully curated teams have established trust in longtime client relationships, and how her design businesses are rooted in her own values of integrating with her clients to provide the best creative solutions. Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and today I am talking with Heather Rose Dunning about her firm, Yellow Dog Studio, and all that she has done to become the incredible entrepreneur that she is. Heather, you're an interior designer, and you've done great things, and I just can't wait for this conversation. Thank you for joining me.
I'm glad to be here.
Great. Well, Yellow Dog is just your most recent studio. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you started that and what it kind of reflects about who you are and where you want to practice?
Yeah, well, it's shocking to me. It feels like, oh, Yellow Dog's new. Yellow Dog is almost 10 years old.
Wow, that's gone by so fast.
I know. And it's like, how did that happen? Yellow Dog started in 2015. Admittedly, I did not start Yellow Dog. The intention was always that I would join Yellow Dog. So I had a non-compete when Yellow Dog was started. So I sat on the bench for a year and schemed on some other things, which we can talk about, because Yellow Dog is really part of an ecosystem. So Yellow Dog is a design firm, and we specialize in interior architecture. But in doing that, and when we go back into some of my past experiences, we did not want to create a big firm. We wanted to create a very small, very agile, very responsive firm of a core group of people who, you know, people can kind of come and go within that. But we also wanted to build a community. And there's these two things in a traditional firm are in conflict, because to keep a really small firm, it's very hard to have a lot of really lovely, interesting people around you all the time and not feel like you have to feed the beast, because that is part of what a big firm, it's what's necessary. It's a necessity at a larger firm.
What a great term, feeding the beast.
Oh, yeah. You can call it, you know, it's like the machine, it's turning the crank, it's all these things, but you are employing people, and therefore you need to provide work to all these people. And sometimes that means you're compromising your values, you're compromising the quality of the work. And it's having put that hat on for a while, that is not really where I belong. I think it does work for many, and that sort of stability of a large firm, or at least the perceived stability of it. There's systems in place to support that. You can wear one hat and do it really well. I like wearing a lot of hats. And yeah, that's kind of where Yellow Dog came from. So Yellow Dog was started by Kim Batchelor, and then ultimately myself. Kim and I have worked together since 2007 at a previous firm. And in fact, our core team right now, they're all people, they're four of us. And we're all people who've worked together since, Tara, I've worked with her since before 2000. Kim, 2007, Molly, 2009. And even as we partner with other people, I mean, there are people from my past firm that we will collaborate with. We have Katie, someone in common that we just finished up a project with. So
that's great.
It's really looking at how to practice in a way that isn't, it's just a little more open. And it's actually a little bit more about how do you craft a good life? And what does that mean to you?
So what does that mean to you to be crafting a firm around your life? What kind of life do you want to live?
Well, I don't really like rules. No, that's not true. That is actually not true. I like rules. I like being in a certain lane sometimes. I also like bending and breaking those rules when it's necessary. When I look back at even, my first firm was called 20 Below Studio. And we started that in 2002. And part of that was I had some clients that I wanted to continue supporting, and large firms weren't making it easy. And talking with leadership, just trying to navigate the structures of it, it wasn't working. And so the client was like, hey, why don't you just do this on your own? And so we did. We sort of fell into it. It was not the grand plan. I was not the person in architecture school who's like, I want to have my own firm someday. That was big and scary. So it really was organically grown, and then it really became something I'm very proud of, but also it had its life, and we were able to just keep moving certain things forward and shedding other things.
And I've heard it affectionately called a pirate ship when I was asking about the culture of that firm. What, can you explain that?
I think this was based on, I want to say it was a Steve Jobs quote of better to be a pirate than join the Navy. I may be misquoting, but the idea of how to make some of your own rules, how to, be a little rebellious and not in a way that is disrespectful or doing things wrong, whatever wrong is, but not just punching the clock, not just, showing up and doing work and going home, and but really being engaged in things. And so even in our current iteration, there's a mural on our building that has a big pirate ship on it.
Oh, that's great. The legend continues. I love that.
That's a little bit of where that came from. Yeah. It's an awesome mural. It Adam Turman painted it for us when we moved into our current building, and recently re-upped it. So we had gotten pretty badly tagged. And so he reimagined the pirate ship mural. And so it's evolved. And as all good things should.
So true. And so I'm hearing this tendency towards, you like rules, but I felt this too, that when I was in a bigger firm, I wanted to change the systems. I wanted more control because it wasn't working for how I wanted to serve clients. What exactly about being able to write your own rules, write the script, and be more nimble in serving clients? What does that do? Does that give you energy? How does that impact your creative process?
Oh, that's a good question. The frustrations that I have had over time were very much about, like, here are the rules, whether it was a firm that had, engineers as part of that firm. Okay, well, we're going to use these and it's going to make the process go smoother. And my experience was always, not really. Like, they might as well be in a different firm because we don't talk to each other. And I don't dislike Walmart, but I have a moment. So it's the difference between when you're going shopping, right? And you go to the best place for your groceries and the best place for your clothing and the best place for your ammo. I always joke that, like, at Walmart, you can get your groceries and your underwear and your ammo in one place. And
this is true.
Maybe awesome if it's all about convenience. Sometimes it is all about convenience, but if it is about what is the best of all of these things, it is not going to be where you can buy all of those things. So I think sometimes the fallacy of a large firm is, oh yes, we have it all under one roof, therefore we've got this quality, we've got this communication. And my experience has been that's not necessarily true. I think there are probably some firms that do that better than others, but that was not my experience.
It doesn't have to be guaranteed. Just because you're living under the same roof doesn't mean you're a cohesive family. There's
a lot of dysfunction that can happen. But it's a harder narrative to tell clients, at least what I'm experiencing, is that I'm a solo practitioner, but I collaborate with other architects and engineers. Mm-hmm. And we are a curated team for you. And then explaining there is security with that. Just because we don't have the years under one roof together, or we're not married under the same firm name, trying to communicate that. How are you doing that?
Well, good news for us is we have longevity. You know, you can see from my hair that I have longevity.
I can't wait for my gray hairs to come in. It means I'm established in the design world.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a funny transition, but that's a whole different discussion. How do we talk about that to clients? I think being really honest about what we can and can't do, being realistic about, you know, we have certain strengths, and our job is not to tell you we can do everything. Our job is to tell you what we're good at and help you find the right partners for this collective team. So you use the word curated. That is very much kind of the place that we play, is we are, there's no land grab here. There's no like, how much more can we bring into this project? And like, we are not landscape architects. If you had me detail a roof, I can't guarantee it's not going to leak. It's not what I do. And that's okay. We have a client who actually just brought us in and really wanted us to be a project manager on a building renovation and do the design work. But I was like, you know what? Our best work is when we're working with a manager who is, you know, dealing with all the various consultants and supporting you in understanding schedule and budget. Like, we can do those things, but that's not why you're hiring us. And so how do we help you craft the team? So that is an important part. You know, it's funny thinking also about like, how do we do big work as a small team? Well, you're never going to get the B team. You're not going to get, you know, JV. It's like, or the A team. It just is what it is. Like, we are the ones you meet with. We're the ones who do the project. We do the internal management. We do the design work. We're always in that. So we're not out seeking work and then passing it off. And that was another piece with a larger firm that we were really struggling with, is we go into these interviews and the client is, you know, there's a rapport with them and, you know, they feel like, okay, this is the right team. And then we pass it to someone else. And that feels really disingenuous to me, of who are they hiring? And sometimes they're hiring a firm and a legacy, but more often when we were in interviews, they were hiring the team sitting in front of them. They're not hiring the bench. And that sounds really crass, but I think it's true. And that was a big reason why we started Yellow Dog, was I felt like I was lying to clients when we'd be sitting in interviews and they say, and you're our people? Yeah, I already have 80 hours worth of work in a week. Yeah, I'll take on more. It's not true. It's not. It can't be. And so we're able, as a smaller firm, to be selective, to make sure that we're aligned with our clients, to make choices and say no when it's not a good fit, to bring on others when we need that. But we don't have the mouths to feed the machine that we have to address. And that's just a different business model.
And that's a great way to put it, is that it is a different business. There are Walmarts, there are boutiques. They serve different people because those people are asking for different things. And so for you, this is what's working and it's what aligns with your clients. Could you tell us what kind of clients and projects you do serve?
Yeah. So if you were just looking at project type, the vast majority of what we do is workplace and hospitality. So it is almost always interior renovation work. Sometimes it's a building that's decrepit and falling down, and sometimes it's a tower in downtown where we're just renovating floors. But it is almost exclusively building renovation work. There are occasions where we'll work with a base building architect and they'll be doing the core and shell and we'll be doing the interior. And we like to partner when we do that. We have sometimes run into troubles because we'll have a base building architect who, it goes back to the land grab. It's like they're really good at the core and shell work and they want to then own the whole project. And that's not always the best way to serve the client. And so that's a challenge. We can get there, and we usually do get there. It just takes a little more navigating and a little more finesse. The right kind of client for us, though, isn't necessarily a project type. It is a project attitude. And that is someone who, it's not just a formula. It's not just like, you know, we need 25,000 square feet and 42 offices and, you know, this sort of thing. It's like, we want to figure out how to do what we're doing differently and better. And they're interested in a dialogue. They're interested in discovery. And that is a big piece of how we practice. When we have clients who say, oh no, I don't want to do that discovery stuff, that's a big red flag for us, because then it's a guessing game. Then it's like, we're not mind readers. We don't know what's inside your head. And it's actually not even usually just about you. It's about what's your business and what's the culture and what are you trying to achieve? Where are you trying to go? And so if we can't ask those questions and have a dialogue, then we're just spitballing. And, you know, if a good project is just about a pretty picture, I mean, there are lots of people who can do that.
And now there's AI generation that's just filling that gap right there.
I know. I mean, that's the easy part. Like, making it pretty, that's like no brainer. It doesn't work. Does it work? Did you enjoy the process? Did you get something out of that? When the project is done, do you feel really good about not just kind of how you got there, but where you're going and how the space now serves that? Do they come back? Do the clients come back? Do they recommend you to other people because, oh my gosh, this was such an interesting, inquisitive experience? It's like, that's actually how we get our work. We don't market. There's no like business development person back there. That would be me and Kim. And it's just having conversations. And again, it's like, are we a good fit? Is this a process that you want to go through? Because we're really damn good at it. And that's the part we love to do more than anything. It's like, how do you crack that nut?
I love that. And I'm really struck by you saying that making it pretty, that's the easy part. It's the things that people don't see in the design that make it really function long term. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to communicate that sometimes to non-designers, but the client's story, the client telling the story of working with you, the client sharing that and recommending you to others who have those problems, that just digs deeper into what change you're actually making in your clients' lives. That's amazing. And for their businesses and hospitality.
I am brought back to, I think it was the very first project Kim and I worked on together. So this was 2007, 2008. And I remember it was a large corporate project. And afterwards, we went through a huge change with them. But afterwards, someone on staff came to us and they said, thank you. You thought of everything. Like, from where I'm sitting to how I get here to where my storage is to how I am able to sort of, you know, cut out the wow. distraction, like all these things. She's like, you thought of everything. And I was like, I mean, it's not a perfect project, but someone felt taken care of. And that's actually our job. Our job is to create spaces for humans to be sort of taken care of in whatever way that they're spending their day. It's part of why so much of what we do is workplace. I'm actually going to rewind and say, when you ask about what kind of projects we do projects for humans.
That's good.
That sounds sort of silly, but it's like, where do you want to spend your day? How do you want to feel? Because that's what's most important to us. And that's why, frankly, so the space I'm sitting in, this is one of our sister businesses. So it's all connected. In addition to Yellow Dog, we actually bought and renovated a building that is a co-working space. And it is, we very affectionately say, for weirdos and misfits, those of us who don't fit boxes very cleanly. So we have, you know, almost 70 members. On any given day, there may be 25 people here. But it's folks like us who just don't fit the box. And we're probably, I don't know, 40, 50% design focus. So architects, designers, we actually have a couple small construction firms here, but then we have, you know, lawyers and people in software and advertising and a writer. And, you know, so that community piece that we miss out of not having a large firm, we have built. So we have the community that is running parallel to Yellow Dog through Scout.
That's incredible. And what a fun way to extend that design relationship with others. And it's in other disciplines, whether or not it's explicitly said that lawyers are creative, but there can be creative lawyers who've got to think outside the box and work outside the box.
Think differently. Yeah.
So how do you find clients that fit this mold? Because of course, once you're in and you've got a good client and they've got friends that are good clients like that, the referral piece is a wonderful, wonderful way to get business. But what are other ways that, I know you're not a machine, but you do need to eat. You do need to feed the firm in some ways. So yes. How are you finding that right fit and where?
Well, the best marketing we can do is a good last project. And so it goes back to, we do not do traditional marketing. We are not out there networking. We have made the choice that that's not where we're going to spend our energy. So what that means is we try to stay connected and constructive with what I'll call the gatekeepers, which is the really good project managers that we enjoy working with, the really good general contractors we enjoy working with. Oftentimes they're in a project before we are. And it's not about chasing every lead on every new project that's out there. I mean, I've been in that world, not interested. There's also a little bit of having, okay, I have been in this industry almost 30 years. My first job, I was in 1994. More than 30 years. Some of it counts, some of it doesn't.
30 years. I just interviewed someone last week and I'm like, you've been practicing for 10 years? No, 30. It's like, oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that I underestimate how long you've been in the business. It's that you don't look that age. People are living and looking great, so much further in life. My grandma at 50 was not.
Oh man. I mean, it's interesting. Actually, before we started, you and I talked very briefly about being moms in this industry too. And that, you know, I'm in milestones right now. I have two kids. My youngest just graduated from high school. He's going off to college. I'm soon to
Congrats.
Be an empty nester.
That's a stage. Yeah.
Thank you. It's a stage. And being a mom and being an entrepreneur, a business owner, someone sitting at the, you know, executive table, my best, most important job is being a mom. And I do think I bring some of that into the office. I mean, people have called me the office mom before. I don't want to mother everybody, but I do try to take care of people. And that is, I think that's part of it. And I also really struggle. I think this is probably pretty typical of primary caregivers, that I need to be there for my kids. And that means I need to work in a firm that has some flexibility and is not going to somehow think of me less than when I go pick up my sick kid. Or when I take a day off because I need a mental health day because I got these other things going on. Or I'm going to go, you know, for 3 days to some, I just got back from a trap shooting tournament in Michigan.
Nice.
Was it fun? Not really. Was it important? Yeah, it really was. And I didn't have to ask permission for that 6 weeks in advance. It was, how do we navigate that? And we do a really good job of that, of, you know, being honest with our clients about what's going on and making sure that they know that our lives, our obligations outside of work are important too. Whether or not you have kids, could be your dog, could be your partner, could be that you just, you know, you're better off if you're throwing pots in the evenings, whatever your thing is, like you have to have a life outside of this or it's just not worth it.
It just completes the picture that you can be your best self and give your best self to your clients when you're able to also be there living your life and living that dream of, mm-hmm. yeah, I mentioned I have 3 kids and 1 more on the way. And it is just, I don't know. I couldn't find anyone in the industry who was living a life I wanted to live in any other firm. They had great lives and they were doing great things. And a lot of them did have kids, but I didn't have a stay-at-home spouse to care. And that's not always the case, but sometimes that's how people make it work. And that was just not going to be how I was going to make it work. And so sometimes you got to write your own story and make it work your own way. And that's why we're here talking about this, that Yellow Dog is its own thing. I have not heard of another studio doing it the exact same way as you're doing this. And there's a beauty to that design, that the design power to your business. We don't just design spaces. We design how these businesses are running and how we're serving our clients in new ways. And it's exciting.
Well, we sure try. You know, it's not that we're not magicians. We're not mind readers. We're, you know, we're just curious. I think more than anything, it's just being curious and knowing that there isn't just one model and not being willing to settle for there's just one model. There's just one way to do this. I got told that once. Sort of patted on the head. We've been doing this a long time. We don't need this. No, it's like, oh, I don't belong here.
So it's time to jump ship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, question for you. What 3 words would describe Yellow Dog Studio?
Oh God. That's the one I couldn't answer.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was like thinking about it, I was like, I have lots of words. They're not usually just words. And actually what I came up with this morning, I didn't shower. I was like, we're just the A-team. It's not like 3 separate words, but that's kind of how we think of ourselves as there is what you see is what you get, right? There's no back of house. There's no bench, no whatever. If I were being more serious about it and like, okay, how can we describe us? It is hard. Curious, curated, caring. Wow, that was a lot of alliteration. Yeah.
You know, just the A-team can sum it up. I had someone else say their 3 words were keep it real. And mm-hmm. that was how he ran his firm. And just the A-team does sound like it sums it up very nicely.
Well, and that's what we tried to do actually at my first firm, 20 Below. And that's what we try to do here at Yellow Dog is really be kind of be the project team and be a partner to our clients and be present.
Well, I actually did a little research on your website trying to come up with a bird because otherwise I'm having this conversation with someone and I'm halfway, my brain is like searching for a bird online. Mm-hmm. But for you, reading your website, it was so clear if you're ready for it.
Okay.
And I really think this works. I believe you're a falcon.
Oh.
Because people hunt with falcons. And if you think of falconry, just the way you describe how you work with your clients, and it's almost like you're an extension of them, tackling these problems for them. And they're not easy problems. These aren't just like mm-mm. hanging out there. These are little rabbits that are running around and you're chasing them down and you're... You got this.
We're herding the rabbits or herding the cats, either
exactly.
way. But yeah.
But mm-hmm. there's a focus. Specifically on your website, there's just this clear focus that you're direct and you're ready to attack these problems. It's how you describe your process. It's how a little bit of that pirate ship mentality carried forward, but you're that partner. And that's why the falconry piece is just so helpful, that you are just, when someone trains as a falconer, it's like every day, like it is an intimate thing. It is a different type of client relationship. It's not transactional.
Yeah.
It is relational mm-hmm. and it is a commitment. And that sounds like how you interact with your clients. It's that you know them well and you're there to attack for them. In your specific like, not, it's not that you stay in a lane. It's just that you know what you do well and you do it so well.
Yeah.
And you go for it. And so falcons aren't fighting wars.
No.
They're not sitting there tweeting, but boy, do you get it done when it comes to the things that matter.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll take Falcon. Falcon's a good one. It's funny when you were describing this, one thing I was remembering is we often talk to clients about we embed ourselves in your organization. We try to become you. We put you on, like we become an extension of you. That's our job. And so as you're describing this, I'm like, oh yeah, that totally fits.
You will go forth and do what they cannot do. They're not catching those bunnies, but you got this.
we're going to catch the bunnies. Okay. My dog would do that. But mm-hmm.
Exactly. And golden retrievers, they can be good helpers with that.
Yes.
Little friendlier persona, maybe.
Yes. So we do. There actually is a big yellow lab who is usually here. There is a yellow dog. This is a yellow dog 2.0 who belongs to Kim. And then I have a crazy, neurotic, old herding dog who I think our dogs are like extensions of us. Crazy, old, neurotic, like whatever.
I love that.
And then, yeah, no. But yellow, I mean, even going back to like what are our values? I mean, yellow dog as a name started kind of tongue in cheek of why are we doing this? Well, we're doing this to have good lives, to spend them with whatever, whoever it is that we love. And for Kim, she doesn't have children, but her yellow dog is her kid. Like that is her family. And when we were at our previous, I'm just going to say the transitional firm, because we went from 20 below to a larger firm to here, 2 years at the larger firm. She couldn't spend time with him and he was old and it was really sad. And she's just like, I can't do this. This is not what I signed up for in whatever my professional life is to somehow leave behind the things I love. Not going to do it. And so it was very much a, how do we build our lives back in a way that we feel good about? And that is about our individual priorities, but also about doing work that's meaningful. And that's kind of where we started.
Yeah, you've got a certain set of skills and it feels so good to be able to help others with those skills and apply them well and to keep developing them mm-hmm. and evolving them in this very long profession. But
it's just going to keep changing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I'd like to get a little bit more on that. How would you recommend someone start to design their own firm or to build their own business around these other priorities that kind of break the mold rather than like picking up a business plan or picking up a business book and saying, okay, these are the steps. These are how it's always been done. This is how I run a firm. How do you approach that challenge differently? What advice would you give someone who is feeling this pressure and wanting to start their own business?
I think, so what you're going to hear from me is I'm trying to shed. So I'm 52, right? I'm going to try to look at it more through the lens of someone in their, like, I'll say a 30-year-old or a, you know, whatever. That lens is different because at the age I am now, at the experience I have enough client relationships, Kim as well. Like we're networked enough because you do have to make a living, right? And even starting out, so my first firm, I think I was 29 when we started 20 Below. We had a client that was encouraging it. We had work. And I think some of the hardest piece in starting a firm is where you're going to get your work. And what does that look like? So there are a couple ways that can happen. One, it was a relationship that I had had. That we had goes back to Good Last Project, right? There are people who are very, very good at networking and that sort of extroverted piece. I'm not good at that. Kim is not good at that. That's not who we are. But as a younger person, that would be something that was important in how do you hunt? So how do you find those connections or not being alone in that? So having partners, right? That maybe bring that skill set. It's important that you do not necessarily operate the same way as your partner or partners, that you do bring different skills. And I will say in at 20 Below, we started with two partners. We ended up with three. We had different skills. There's good and bad with that. There's one person who was very interested in sort of networking and schmoozing, and sometimes that served us well. It wasn't the end all be all, but it was important to a degree. With being a younger person and stepping into that, it's how do you get your voice heard? And how do you help clients recognize that you're not just flying solo, that you do have, you may not have all the experience. Again, thinking this, you know, 30-ish year old person, you may not have all the experience, but you know how to curate that experience with other people. And there is a skill to that of being able to say, I don't know everything, but I am curious and I like to curate. And on your behalf, we're going to figure this out. The biggest challenge is how do you find work?
It is. And I actually appreciate that we talked about different firms do different things. And yes, there is that way of kind of like being a turkey and just like networking and picking up whatever is sitting around. But you really built that client relationship. And I'm just impressed that before 30, that you were in a position in a firm that you were able to build that authentic connection with someone. And I'm hearing some of maybe the pieces that went into that connection, that you're honest about what you can do, honest about what you can't do, but affirming to the client that I may not know this, but I will get this done for you and I will figure this out because I know how to solve the problem. I may not solve it myself, but I know how to get someone who can or to work with you. Are there other ways that you've built strong client relationships? Or what else goes into building a strong client relationship?
I think some of it is some transparency and being willing to be human. I mean, some of my favorite clients are friends now. I mean, building some relationship, and some of them are not. It's not like everybody's like honky dory, but there is a lot of like letting down your guard and just sort of showing the human side, not pretending that like this is all I do all day long. It's like, no, actually it's not. That's a hard question.
It is, because it's probably something you do naturally, that the second we were on the phone together or on this call, I just felt so connected to you. And there was just like this immediate joy and energy that you brought to the conversation. And it was just so natural that you almost miss what has happened to make this instant connection, what goes into that, because it's almost like you've got to have it. That spark, that charisma. And if it comes naturally to you, then leveraging that strength to just do what you love to do and connect with people.
Yeah. I mean, for us, we're always, I mean, I even think about when we go into interviews, right? Well, we try to be prepared and like we've done our research. We've tried to gather as much information as we can, but we don't go in with a like, this is what we're going to do in the interview. Like, here's our PowerPoint or here's our presentation. It's like, we actually go into most interviews and say, we have these things. We can do these things. We would much rather have a conversation with you and get to know you a little bit, see if we're a good fit for each other. That's a two-way street. That's not a one-way street. That's a, like, are we a good fit for you? Are you a good fit for us? Like, it's a little bit like dating. You know, there's a piece of that in all of this. Like, we're not just going to take a project because it's there. And some clients don't like that, or I should say some potential clients don't like that. We've actually had criticism of like, you were in an interview. Why are you trying to interview us? And I was like, well, because this is a relationship and it's not one way. And so it is important for us to know like how, what makes you tick? Like what is important to you? And can we all be successful in that relationship? That's an important part of it. And so I don't think of myself as someone with charisma, particularly, you have this to look forward to, Katie. Like as you get older and things start hurting, you're like, I am not in a mood today. You do not want me talking to people.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's just, there's a vulnerability associated with it. There is just an openness to human connection.
And it's interesting how this now starts to give a precursor to the process that you implement with the client. That if a client is looking for someone who's going to show the facts at them and design it for them, it's a hands-off. It's not that Falcon extension of who their company is and what they're trying to accomplish. It's not that partnership. It's a transactional thing that we're here. We want a corporate design. And will you deliver this to us? And what are your milestones? What are your prices? It's a different conversation that you're having in that interview. And so it sounds like the way that you're walking into the room and presenting yourselves is trying to give that client a feeling of how it's going to be like to work with you. Because as you said, you are just the A team. Mm-hmm. They will just be working with you.
This is who you're going to get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it doesn't mean that we don't, you know, put together schedules and put together like, this is what the fee structure is going to be.
Of
we
course.
Have to do those things.
Yeah.
But you know, in commercial interior work, frequently it is at $1 per square foot. And it's just formulaic, you know, just like in, you know, freestanding construction, it's often a percentage of construction. While we know that that's an arena we have to play in, for every single project we pursue, we do a work plan. And that work plan has a schedule, has hours, has dollars. And we are very transparent about that with our clients. So when we put a proposal together, there's a scope that is tied to a work plan, that is tied to a schedule. And it's like, we don't want to go into something with an open checkbook. We don't want to go into anything with no real expectations of what are our deliverables going to be? How are we going to get there? Quite frankly, doing a good discovery process it makes the rest of it more efficient. If you're spitballing, you're just throwing stuff at a wall until something sticks, right? And you may have to reiterate and just keep going back over things, as a guessing game until something strikes the client as something they feel good about, or not. But if you are doing a good discovery process, it's not a guessing game. It's like, okay, we went through these things. This is what we learned. How are we going to take that forward? We went through these things. This is what we learned. How are we going to take that forward? And it's like, you're constantly moving through that. So, you know, you get into your phases of schematic design, you know, design development, documentation. It's like, well, that's easy because we've done this work on the front end and we pause at phases and sort of check in of, okay, let's revisit. This is why we got here. And frankly, when new people come into a project, which does happen in project teams, like a client, we've had CEOs change in the middle of a project. We've had the internal project manager change. If we've done a good discovery process, people can be brought on board really quickly and easily. It's documented. And it's like, this is how we got here. So it's not about one person's personality. It's not about like, well, Jimmy likes blue, which, you know, happens.
It does happen. Yeah.
And so it really makes a huge difference in how we move through a process.
I love this. And it's been so interesting to hear, yeah, just how Yellow Dog Studio is structured and how it's just really wonderfully reflected your strengths and a reflection of your experience, because there is something to be said for advice for those who are starting their own business later. but you've done it a couple times. Was there anything different in being a serial entrepreneur a little bit? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. That's such a weird thing to think about, because as a young person, I would never have thought, oh, I'll start my own firm. Never. Wouldn't have crossed my mind. And because it was too intimidating, it's too risky. I don't want to have to take care of other people. I don't want to be responsible for these other people. Okay. So much of it goes back to, what are your values? If you could find that in a firm and not start your own, that's great. That's awesome. I mean, there are places like that. If you can't, you can choose to either just be frustrated forever or try something. I can tell you, when I was 29 and we decided to start a firm, my mom had passed away 2 years prior to that, and it was pretty sudden and it kind of rocked my world. But the silver lining in all of it was kind of, what am I afraid of? I mean, really, really getting real with myself about, like, I don't do certain things because I'm afraid. But what am I afraid of? Am I afraid that I'm going to fail? Yeah. But what's wrong with failing? Am I afraid that I'm going to go broke? Maybe. Can I still get a job? Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of things that when you put you really get serious about, like, what is keeping me from doing this thing? If that's a direction you feel like you need to move, create your safety nets, create your board, the people you go to rely on to work through some of this stuff. Because I think we often do things or don't do things out of fear. And it doesn't serve anybody well. It doesn't mean be reckless, but if what's holding you back from living your best life, and oftentimes that's about we spend so many of our waking hours at work, damn well better enjoy it. It's like not worth it if you don't. And so that was, for me, that was sort of a big deal of putting that lens on of, like, what am I afraid of? Like, this isn't going to kill me. If I fail, I'll just pick it up and do something else. And that shifted everything for me, because taking the fear out of it, or at least being able to acknowledge, where's the fear coming from? And how real is it? How big is it? That made a difference. And I try to come back to that.
It resonates, because I feel like I had the exact same conversation with myself after wrestling. But I was coming into it with always wanting to start a firm in college. I always wanted to have my own business, because it's, my dad had his own flower shop and I was raised kind of in his small town flower shop. It was a way that I saw how my parents were able to be there for us kids. And so I saw it as an avenue to live this life that's holistic with family. But I had to tackle the same hurdles of, will I just fit in with another firm? Can I do this any other way? How am I going to learn these tactics and how to learn to get clients? But that fear conversation, I very specifically remember that one. And yep, it's exactly as you said it. That's how it went through my head and heart before taking flight. So
yeah.
Oh, Heather, thank you.
Well, thank you, Katie. This was great.
There's more we can talk about, but
I know. We could just go on and on and on.
Heather Rose Dunning has built several brands that operate on excellence. Her role in a design project is purposeful and precise, much like a falcon in flight. She knows her greatest strength within a team. She leverages that to achieve her clients' goals. And her success builds a lasting trust, a trust that is foundational to procuring future work through referrals. The first step in Heather's A-team is knowing what they do best. Falconeers don't just choose any bird. They don't go for a cardinal, chicken, or penguin. That can't do what they need. A falcon is unique. Its powerful eyes can lock upon prey a mile away. And it flies fast with unblinking precision towards that prey to strike with perfect accuracy. Heather's A-team works the same way. They have optimized themselves. They see the project goals the clearest. They put a plan into action swiftly, and they complete projects with a high degree of success. Not just pretty spaces. As Heather says, making it pretty is the easy part. The projects achieve deeper goals of performing well for her clients. And that level of success depends on our second point, choosing the right goal. Heather works intimately with her clients, so much that she asks her clients to consider her team an extension of her clients' team. Working together, they can achieve a greater level of focus on what project goals will truly make a difference for their space and for their team. Imagine Heather's team is the falcon on the arm, waiting for the right target before taking flight. If there are aspects of the goal that don't align with Heather's team, then she readily collaborates with professionals that can get it done. Because the falconer can't expect a falcon to fetch a newspaper or bring a cup of water, Heather knows exactly what her team does best and works with the client to apply those skills for the best results. And those results build trust, which is our final point. Yellow Dog Studios isn't offering a product. They are not a transactional design firm. Heather's team designs projects to transform their clients' lives and businesses. Living through that transformation and experiencing the result at the end of a project builds lasting trust, the kind of trust that leads to telling the design story. And these stories lead to warm referrals, but more frequently, like a falcon returning to the arm. Heather's team is called back to work with same clients again and again. Her strongest marketing strategy is to maintain that trust. She doesn't need to optimize her website or endlessly network to get new leads into a funnel. She is already doing the work. She can stay focused on serving her top clients to get more projects. That can be difficult to replicate if you are just starting your own firm. But even if you are just starting out, there are so many people that you have met along the way. Consider listing every person who has been on your path. It could be teachers, mentors, project managers, adjacent professionals, or even clients. When you do your work exceptionally well within a team, it shows. And when you are ready to take off on your own, let those people know, and they'll remember and want to work with you again. Because you don't need everyone to know your name, just the right people to know your worth. Season 2 of the Flying Solo podcast is sponsored by the Minnesota Architectural Foundation, whose mission is to invest in excellence, leadership, discovery, and equity within the profession of architecture. To join the Flying Solo movement, visit the website flyingsolo.live. That's flyingsolo.live for links to our Instagram, Substack, and the Wingbeat newsletter, a weekly dose of birdspiration and practical tips to help you grow your business and your confidence as a solopreneur architect. While you're there, take the bird quiz to discover which bird best matches your solopreneur style. For even more resources and encouragement, you can find all the Flying Solo episodes on the Gable Media platform at gablemedia.com. That's gablemedia.com, the premier destination for podcasts about architecture and design. And if you're looking for community, connection, and real conversations, check out the Entree Architect Network at entrearchitect.com. There's a link in the show notes. Whether you join one of their masterclasses or the free Facebook group, you'll find a community of small firm architects sharing ideas, challenges, and wins. Proving that while we may work solo, we're never alone. As Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architects, says, it's all about doing better practice and better work every day. Thank you for listening to Flying Solo. I'm Katie Kangas, and my hope is to empower you, aspiring architects and creative entrepreneurs, to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.